The impacts of World War II were felt throughout the country. Sons and husbands went off to war. There were blackouts and rationing at home, and a real concern about an assault on the continental U.S. Martha's Vineyard felt all of these impacts, perhaps more acutely than other parts of the country because of its size and geographic location. Martha's Vineyard in World War II is a new book by Tom Dresser, Herb Foster, and Jay Schofield. Tom Dresser and Jay Schofield join us in the studio in Woods Hole. Good morning to you both.
Thank you.
Good morning.
So even before the attack on Pearl Harbor, island volunteers were used as plane spotters. They were given posters and playing cards to help identify silhouettes of the planes. Also, vineyarders would hear the drone of U.S. squadrons heading east to Europe. That must have brought home the reality of war.
Yeah, I would say the proximity of Martha's Vineyard to not only the mainland, but obviously from across the ocean, really put it in a very vulnerable spot. Germany had been bombing Great Britain for a while, and Pearl Harbor, of course, had taken place, and people were just really concerned about it. So plane spotting got to become a real approach for people to use. It was so important that the down island towns especially had their observation posts.
And this is before the days of radar, or radar was just in its infant stages. So having volunteers willing to scan the skies day and night, that was really an important task.
Yeah.
And people took to it very readily.
The Van Ripper Model Shop in Vineyard Haven made individual ship models. Its reputation of the shop grew so much that the Maritime Commission and the Navy commissioned the shop to build both ship and plane models. So what were the models used for?
I can address that. I wrote a man's life story who made those model ships. And so I did separate research aside from this particular publication. Mr. Leonard made these ships under Mr. Van Riper. And as he was making just regular ships, these were oftentimes models of people who had big yachts from Maine. And they would come on vacation. They had unlimited amounts of money to have them make these little model ships that people would put on their mantles. Well, a man walked into the office one time in August of 41, and he said to Mr. Leonard, "Are you Mr. Leonard?" "Yes." "Do you make model ships?" "Yes." "How many do you make in a year?" And he said, "Usually two or three." And he said, "How about making 1,000? And Mr. Leonard said, "Why would you need 1,000 ships?" And he said, "Well, we work for the government, and we have a feeling Japan is going to be not all that friendly in the near future." And that was 6 months before Pearl Harbor.
Wow.
So they started making these ships, which were called recognition models. And they were made of varying lengths and varying colors, but made to scale, especially the decks made to scale, for teaching pilots the difference between not only American ships, but Japanese ships, which were either merchant ships or military ships. So they had to differentiate because America never wants to bomb civilians, you
right,
know.
Of course,
so,
yeah.
So that was pretty much the case. So they started making these all these ships, and they were made of varying height lengths, so that the people who were trained, and these were all trained here on there over on Martha's Vineyard, they were trained to spot the various ships.
Right. And then the same thing with the planes.
Yeah, planes also, but mostly the ships were created for that purpose.
Mm-hmm. U-boats or submarines played a big role in World War II and were known to be lurking in the waters of the East Coast off of the U.S. There are stories about some of the German U-boats surfacing at night in the lee of the island to charge batteries. That
yes.
must have been kind of eerie.
Well, it was eerie, or it is eerie to think about that, but the people at the time sort of took it in the nature of the situation. They said, okay, we understand that they're there, but they're not doing us any harm as long as they don't land and they don't bomb anything. And they didn't actually land on the vineyard, as far as we know. We have some stories about it, but we don't have concrete evidence of it. But several people mentioned that they did hear the submarines surfacing to charge their batteries at night, and they notified the Coast Guard, and the Coast Guard just said, we can't bomb them. They're too close to civilians, and they're not really hurting us. But we did a little research and we contacted a historian in Germany, and he was able to track the submarines that were around Martha's Vineyard. And over the course of the war, over 19 different submarines were in our waters. So it was a real situation that you had to worry about.
What were the impacts of the war on ferry service to the islands? Was there concern about U-boats?
Well, I talked to someone in Nantucket, and they told me that the ferry boats were, I think they were painted gray to sort of disguise them a bit. They didn't print the schedules because they didn't want any saboteurs to find out about the ferry route. And during the blackout situation, they ran the ferries with no lights on. There's another situation that our third author could address more specifically, but it's about the ferry boats themselves. Two of them were taken over by the Navy during the war and brought over to England, and they were outfitted for the British Navy, and they brought soldiers over to Normandy, and they were used as hospital ships, really, after the Normandy invasion. And that kind of brings the Vineyard right into the biggest part of the conflict, that it was really a very serious situation, and they used ferry boats to help out in the war.
And these were the ferry boats Nashon and New Bedford, right? Were that the names of the ferry boats? Yeah.
The
Martha's Vineyard Shipbuilding Company also contributed to the war effort. What kind of vessels were they building for the Navy?
There were three different kinds that they made. The first one, which is sort of a little bit ironic name, it's called the Honey Barge, and those were little barges that would go out to Navy vessels and bring in the garbage. A second barge was used to go out to seaplanes, and they would arm them. So that would be bringing out armaments and putting them in the seaplanes. And the third one was to transport men to different places. So they were a number of different boats. I think they built almost 100 boats during the war. And what's sort of ironic, Jay talked about the Van Riper model shipyard. That was on one side of the street. On the other side of the street was the Martha's Vineyard shipyard building full-size boats.
Who knew, right?
Yeah. It's ironic that it's all right there.
And the Martha's Vineyard Airport was created during the war. It was a naval auxiliary air facility. What kinds of missions were the pilots flying who were based on the Vineyard?
The primary purpose of the airport's use was to practice touch-and-go landings. And touch-and-go means that they measured off the exact length of an aircraft carrier. And the various pilots that were there were trained at coming down and expecting perhaps a less-than-smooth landing on a carrier. And then they would just touch and take off again, as we may have seen in some movies sometimes, mm-hmm. some of the military movies. So that was one of the primary purposes of that area. Also, for the spotting, identifying of the planes, I want to get back to that for a moment.
Yeah.
They had a theater in there, and the theater had all of these various planes that every fighter pilot in America was trained in on the Vineyard in that area. And the man who ran the movies for them just passed away a few months ago, mm-hmm. actually, and he was the one in charge of doing all the movies. But that was a primary purpose of the airport. Also, it was just a recognition of it all.
How did the three of you come together to do this book? I mean, how did this come about? Because it's really fascinating.
Sounds,
you sort of seem each have your areas of expertise.
Well, a few years ago, Jay wrote two different books that involved World War II, Pearls of Patriotism and The Final Salute.
Our Final Salute.
And The Final Salute was about the letters that his father and brothers wrote during the war. So it was all related to World War II, and adding, besides the letters, he sort of did background information. So he was sort of an expert on it. The person who came up with the idea was Herb Foster, who is a World War II veteran. He was 17 in 1946, and he just got in on what they consider the tail end of the war, and he was in part of the occupation of Japan. And he asked me a couple of years ago if we could do a book. And I had not had an interest in World War II except reading Jay's books. And so Herb came to me, I went to Jay, and we sat down last summer and said, do you want to do it? The two of them had never met. You know, we put it together. And because I had worked for History Press, I had an in with a publisher, and I got to my commissioning editor and said, can I work with two other guys? They said, fine, as long as you can work out how you're going to put the book together and how you're going to divide up the millions of dollars that you get in royalties. And we'll see how that goes.
The book recounts how many plane crashes there were involving planes based on the Vineyard and not from enemy fire.
Right.
Yeah.
It had to have been very hard to fly a plane because most of the lights were out. So the lights out on the island made landing at night
tricky.
Somewhat of a challenge.
Yeah.
So that's one of the reasons why a lot of planes went down. And like most military information back then, a lot of it was withheld, and it wasn't really broadcast an awful lot. But the local paper managed to put in what they could about a plane crash here and a plane crash there. Of course, some went down the ocean, so they were not discussed heavily. So it's a matter of military secrecy, how much really went down, how many really went down.
The Vineyard was also the site of mock invasions. So in many ways, the Vineyard was the perfect setting to practice the type of beach invasions that were planned for Normandy.
Mm-hmm. Yes, it was. When we talk about the invasion, it's kind of impressive to people to think that we were invaded. But the troops came from Camp Edwards here on Cape Cod, and they were transported across Vineyard Sound in these small landing craft boats, LCMs, that would pull up on the beach and let the bow down. And they were practicing these in the late summer of 1942. Now, if you think the war began basically at the beginning of 42, all these submarines were in the water in the first few months of 1942, and they started to do this invasion. They practiced one invasion in August of 42, and that was not disseminated in the press. No one could talk about it. But I came across a diary of a gentleman in West Tisbury who knew this was going on and recorded it, and I've got a lot of details on that. And then a month or 2 months later, they had a second invasion, and that was publicized. That was in the Falmouth Enterprise. It was in the Vineyard Gazette. And this is where they had thousands of troops coming across. They actually did invade several beaches along the north shore of the Vineyard, and the soldiers tramped through the woods. Jay interviewed some young teenagers who saw the soldiers, knew they were coming. No one was afraid because they knew it was American soldiers, but they were sort of empathetic to them. They had to go through the brambles and bushes and traipse through the field. They sent paratroopers down to the airport, and this is not the Martha's Vineyard airport because that hadn't been built yet. It was to another airport, the Katama Airport, over on the other side of the island. And they had all these invading forces, and it was practice run to see exactly what you said about Normandy. And they liked the way the boats ran with the bows that came down so soldiers could get off the boats quickly and then could go right onto the beaches. Now, between the invasion here and the D-Day invasion, there was the invasion of North Africa. So that was another trial run, basically, for Normandy.
Right. Now, so essentially, all of the island was fair game for the maneuvers, even private property.
Yeah. I mean, the whole place.
I'd like to add to that a bit. Along with the mock invasions, there were also folks who were parachuting down.
Wow.
So just to get that actual feeling, too, of landing. And in typical military fashion, once their parachutes were no longer of any particular need, they were just left there on the property. And islanders, being the very resilient and resourceful group that they were, a lot of them grabbed up these parachutes. And, of course, nylon was very hard to find during the war. And a lot of the mothers cut out the parachutes and made underwear for their kids from the parachutes. So they were all over. And the islanders were very resourceful along those lines. There were girls who didn't have much money even before that. Parents that didn't have much money to buy their girls fancy dresses made them out of burlap bags, which were very colorful back then. They were burlap seed and so forth were sold in these big burlap bags. Very colorful and interesting designs, but they kind of had half an eye toward making them as potential dresses for the girls. So all the girls kind of dressed alike, so it wasn't a status thing.
Right.
You know, so they would make them out of these burlap bags. And so,
yeah,
so
very resourceful.
Islanders have always been very resourceful.
So when you're talking about the secrecy, obviously you can't talk about some things. There were some things in the paper, there were some things that weren't. How did you go about collecting all of the information that you needed, because, you know, it's in different sources, as I guess it is with all history. It's, you know, you get lucky sometimes. But how did you go about that process?
They can censor the newspapers, they can censor photographs, but they can't censor your mind and your memory.
Right.
And we have a person on the vineyard, Lindsay Lee, who's done a number of interviews of people of the age who were around during the war.
In her oral history
both
project.
Veterans,
right, yeah.
And people who were younger, who were teenagers during the war. And so we started with what she had done, her research, and used some quotes that she had. But then we sort of used our resources of people that we knew, like Jay has done a number of these personal interviews and life stories of people. And he just went back to someone who said, you know, sort of did a toss-off sentence to one of his interviews 5 years ago about working for the Red Cross making bandages. And he said, well, if she was making bandages at this little store in Vineyard Haven in 1942, she must know a few more things. And that just opened the door. So yeah. Jay was really the interview expert.
So Jay was really going back in some of the previous books you've worked on and going over your notes and saying, whoa, here's a little morsel right there.
Yeah, there are a lot of little morsels. These people were so helpful to our cause. And there was a lot of respect for England at the time. And one brief story, we have a Chilmark on Martha's Vineyard. There's a Chilmark in England. Of which we got our name, Chilmark. There was a church, the church in Chilmark, England, was also the secret military secret headquarters for the English. Well, the Germans found out about it, and the Germans bombed that church, just destroyed it, which obviously upset a lot of the people in Chilmark, England. Well, the news reached Chilmark, Martha's Vineyard, and one of the women that I interviewed said, we didn't stand for that. We decided to start raising money. So they started raising all this money through food drives and anything else they could to send money to Chilmark, England, to rebuild the church. So there's a real strong connection there between Great Britain and the vineyard. But that's a perfect example of how everybody worked together.
And I know you did a lot of the research. Tom, you must have been like, some of these you're going, really? I mean, there's a lot of really interesting tidbits here that who knew, right?
We didn't call them tidbits. We called them nuggets.
Nuggets.
And we met each week, and Jay came up with the idea of just, you know, I got another nugget to share. It was unbelievable. Herb would go on the internet, and he would say, you know, this person did this and so forth. And Jay would come up with an interview that he had. And I read the Vineyard Gazette for 4 years of time. And I would come up and say, well, that backs up this story, and that backs up that story. So it was like a whole lot of little pieces that came together.
Mm-hmm. The book is Martha's Vineyard in World War II by Tom Dresser, Herb Foster, and Jay Schofield. Tom Dresser and Jay Schofield, thanks for coming in the studio and talking with us about it.
Thank you.
I'm Indy Todd. Thanks for listening.